just because you analyze a deal as an expert, I mean, Harvard degree, real estate, commercials, CCIM, ABC, 1, 2, 3, I got all of the licensure under the sun, doesn't mean you're a successful real estate investor. So for me, it was a case of being able to, and look, the word pivot has been overused, but being able to very quickly understand that I have to adjust as this landscape is adjusting with me.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Dave Seymour is a retired 16-year veteran of the fire service, and he launched his real estate career over a decade ago. If you're not aware, he's rapidly becoming one of the country's top investors, and within his first few years, Dave transacted tens of millions of dollars in real estate and has become one of the nation's leading experts in commercial multifamily transactions. Other fun facts about Dave is that he's an ex-reality TV flipping expert. I guess you can get on and find the four seasons he was on and see all the flipping shows that Dave hosted and was part of. And yeah, just pleasure to have you on the show today, Dave. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, man. I appreciate the invite. Appreciate you having me on to share my incredible knowledge.
Oh, man, you self-deprecate yourself. I guess if that's even the right word to say that.
Yeah. Elevate or deprecate, right? Self-deprecating humor. Make fun of oneself to allow somebody to feel good about themselves. I'll do a little bit of that as well, whatever it takes.
Fantastic, man. There's three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show. Can you very quickly tell us, where did you start? Where are you now? How did you get there?
Great question. Look, I started with a financially broke attitude or skill set, which was based off of the information I was given growing up. I have a funny accent. I was born in London, emigrated to the States back in the mid-80s, 20 years old, and just worked my assets off, trading time for money. So that has a ceiling as a limitation on income potential. Around 2006-07, I was working in the fire department, 42, 46 hours a week, construction, another 42, 44, part-time job, another 20. Wonder why all my relationships were falling apart. And for me, in that construction world, I got to see real estate investors coming onto my job sites, wearing cleaner clothes, driving nicer cars, and smiling. It wasn't part of my regular routine. So that drove me to learn. It drove me to ask questions. It drove me towards education. I was going through a pretty rough time personally as well as financially in 2007-08. I was losing my primary residence in a foreclosure crisis that a lot of people went through ignorance. I hold responsibility for it today, right? And found myself in one of those traveling circus real estate seminars. No money down real estate. You can too. Ba, ba, ba. And look, man, I went for it. I kind of used the Tony Robbins model. You burn the bridges if you want to take the island. And that was what I did. And I went all in. And the first transaction I did was a wholesale single family transaction. I made $5,000 and I didn't own the real estate. And I thought to myself, this is either illegal or it's a secret. I figured out it was a secret because the cops didn't come and arrest me. And I went from one to the next, to the next, to the next. Picked up some single family buy and holds, some small multifamily buy and holds. I learned that I didn't want to be a landlord. I was a lot happier not taking the phone call that Bobby got stuck in the toilet at 4 o'clock in the morning. Just challenges, people challenges. Found myself in the lending business. I was a hard money lender, private lender. I began my own coaching and education and found that to be highly challenging from the standpoint of setting expectations. Somebody thinks they're going to make $1 million in a week because they're now doing real estate. It's not a reality. It's a fallacy. So I learned a lot about that world. And at the same time, for me, I was always in motion, right? Being stagnant is a challenge. Got to surround myself with some of the very, very best people in this industry nationwide. Because of the TV show, it allowed me to have exposure on CNN and NBC and Squawk Box. And all of a sudden, I'm an expert because I was on a TV show. I'll let you know a little secret. Just because you're on a TV show doesn't mean you're an expert. You could be an absolute idiot. It just looks good on camera. But anyway, that was it. That was the transition. I was running a pretty substantial hard money lending business late 19, early 20. We know what happened in 2020. And that lending business was out of business very quickly because Wall Street stopped buying our non-QM loans. So I couldn't turn the LOC that we were working from. And regrouped with my now partner, Walter Nowicki, and our third partner, Eric Wilson. Walter had done approximately $250 million with the multifamily transactions in the Southwest Florida market. And we said, let's double down and go all in. We went through our SEC filings for $100 million private equity fund, primarily investing in multifamily assets B class. And that's where we started. And today we have about $320 million in the pipe in various phases of development as the compression of cap rates came into the marketplace with all the silly money that needed to be spent. Instead of staying just in what we had described in our PPM, we pivoted out of that into some ground up construction. We're building a 106-unit multifamily asset in Cape Coral. I've got 320 single-family build-for-rent communities in transition in Cape Coral as well. That's the short story from broker's a joke to being in a position today where I raise a lot of capital, deploy it, and pay my returns. So how'd I do?
That's fantastic. I love the always in motion idea. How do you balance being always in motion and yet at the same time going the idea of an inch wide and a mile deep? Because what we find is a lot of people, they stay in motion for so long, they never get anywhere.
Yeah. To bring that down to a simple statement, I saw a lot in my years of coaching and business coaching and real estate education was that there are a lot of people get comfortable in analysis, right? When we talk about that paralysis analysis. Just because you analyze a deal as an expert, I mean, Harvard degree, real estate, commercial, CCIM, ABC, 1, 2, 3, I got all of the licensure under the sun, doesn't mean you're a successful real estate investor. So for me, it was a case of being able to, and look, the word pivot has been overused, but being able to very quickly understand that I have to adjust as this landscape is adjusting with me. So if I'm always in analysis and I'm never pulling the trigger, I'm not making the offer, I'm not raising the capital, I'm not deploying the capital, then I'm just playing the game. And look, man, let's just be 0 degrees and be frank with each other. There's a lot of people out there right now that are playing the game and not necessarily being successful in the game. And that puts a lot of capital at risk. And as a fiduciary and a steward of other people's capital, I'm not interested in that. I'm not interested in a 10-year play pushing rents at 7% every year. That's how we're going to make money. No, stupid. That's how you're going to lose money. So for me, I have to really be able to adjust and focus on statistics and market trends to be able to be successful with it. But you got to make an offer. You got to move money. Nothing happens if money doesn't move.
How long did it take you in early 19 or late 19, early 20, I guess, when COVID kicked off? How long did it take you to figure out that your lending business was just time to shut the doors?
3 days.
Wow.
So what I did was is I had enough relationships in the lending community to make sure that my borrowers were not stuck. And I turned those borrowers over to other lending partners that I had who could carry that load for us. It was about $15 million in deal flow at that moment in time. See, the challenge was it was almost one of those moments of clarity. It was almost an epiphany for me because I realized that at that moment in time, he or she who controls the capital is going to win this game, right? And I was working off of a $50 million line of credit that was not my own balance sheet. So I never really had money. I never had that money to lend. I was brokering capital. It's a lot easier and it's a lot less risky to be a broker, right? It takes no cojones. It takes no skin in the game. It's like, I'm a broker. I'm intelligent. And I realized that if I wanted to be as successful as I believed I could be and the company that I represent, then it was a case of taking control of that capital. So that was it for us. I mean, we were out in, like I said, 3 days because the line of credit had a 5-day turn. So if I couldn't sell that note back to Wall Street in a couple of days, the notes were due. So
how did you unwind that again? That sounds like I wouldn't have slept for 3 days.
I'm not saying I slept for 3 days. Look, here's the thing. I think real estate at any level, whether it's what we're doing today at the commercial level, ground up, GCs, et cetera, or whether it's a single family buy, fix and flip, or even a single family wholesale transaction, selling the equity in a contract. I think real estate has an inert gift that a lot of other industries don't have. And that's that collaboration is better than competition. I'll say that again. Collaboration is better than competition. There is always an opportunity to collaborate. So because at Freedom Venture, we bring that collaborative mindset to everything that we do, when met with a challenge, as we did with the lending business, I went to my other lending collaborative partners. And I call them partners because I still get a check every now and again off of a referral basis, which is nice, which is appreciated. You know, I just took that borrower pool that we had in place and turned it over to the guys and ladies in the business that I know, trusted, and loved would take care of my clients. If you think about the crash 2009, it wasn't anybody in that financial industry who was handing their clients over to somebody who could take care of them, right? They're just like, sorry, doors are closed. And that's the same in raising money as well. I think about my clients, I think about their capital invested in our projects, their capital invested in our fund structures, et cetera. And for me, it's like always having a plan B, C, and D. I know every accredited investor signs a PPM that says you can lose every dime. This is risky, right? We all know that. But that's not an out. That's not a get out of jail free card, man. That's just the SEC doing its thing. So I like collaboration. I want to be able to take care of the people that invest with us and alongside us. And whatever capacity, whether they're borrowing capital to do a buy, fix, and flip, or whether they're lending capital for a targeted double-digit return, it's the same concept.
Raising capital and lending, I'm sure you got a lot of experience on the lending side. So being familiar with the borrower, with the lender, being wearing all of those hats, I'm sure it would lend itself, no pun intended, really well to going out and then raising large amounts of capital. Were there any struggles along that journey? You guys say, hey, look, you're doing great. You've done $250 million. It's awesome. Let's go open $100 million fund. Like, that's a big jump for a lot of people. What were some things you did to really make sure that that took off with the right inertia?
That's a great question, man. And it, look, I don't care how experienced you are in the business. It's trial and error, right? We tried a couple of different marketing strategies and marketing capital investments that basically failed miserably. Chasing down and enticing and engaging the retail investor is interesting. I use an analogy in every one of our E-suite meetings is nobody in this room, nobody engages in pushing a donkey up a hill. Okay. Think about that for a second. If it feels like pushing a donkey up a hill, if it feels like resistance, then it's wrong. Something isn't right. And usually what I found was, is that there weren't enough questions being asked of the potential lender than there were in everybody runs out with features and benefits. I've got targeted double-digit returns. I'm in the Florida market. I'm in the best market. I'm the balls. Look at me. I'm all that in a bag of chips. Yay, give me money. And people go, no, I don't want to give you any money. You haven't asked me what I want. So as soon as I was able to identify the, we call them pain points, et cetera, et cetera. As soon as I was able to identify what my accredited investor was really looking for, that's when I became more successful in raising the capital. And a lot of the times it was the simplicity of risk aversion, taxes, fear of a major financial event in their lives was prevalent, be it illness. And then as soon as COVID hit, we saw so much of a knee-jerk reaction financially that for some people, it was a challenge. And for other people, it was an opportunity, right? Isn't that the case in all things, right? One man's trash, another man's treasure, that kind of concept. So once we dialed that in, we got better at it. And then I would say 8 months, 9 months into that process, we began to feel the pain and the workload of managing that database of people, right? And I mean that with respect to any one of our investors. But the investor who put in 50 grand made a lot more noise than the investor who put in 500,000. So what can you do to educate them and bring them up the gradient? We worked hard on that. And then we began to entertain some of the high net worth family office, smaller institutional capital. That required a lot less education, but it required a lot more relationship building. So I don't think there's an easier, softer way to any of these challenges in raising capital. Somebody tells you it's easy to raise money, they're a liar. It takes work, it takes finesse, it takes track record. But I tell you, man, I wouldn't be in any other position than where I am right now. I love what I do. So
that's fantastic. And I love the idea of who pushes the donkey up a hill.
Yeah. If you're pushing a donkey up a hill, it's wrong, man. It's like, guy said to me one time, he said, any sales type environment, he said, it's really hard to sell a hamburger to somebody who's not hungry. Even if it's the best, juiciest, prime, beefiest, yummiest burger that was ever freaking invented. If I'm already full and I'm not hungry, I don't want your burger, right? So how do you create a void that your product then fills? That's the art of bringing in the traditional investor.
Fantastic. Dave, we've got just a few minutes here left. I want to hear, I know we've kind of talked about this on this show before, but why you guys are doing Build for Rent and doing a lot more ground up. What's the driving cause of that versus value add? And how are you finding opportunity on that front?
That's a great question. Look, man, here's what we saw very quickly. I would say 8 or 9 months ago, we began to see the value add opportunities at a 6.5-7 cap acquisition price, with the opportunity to push to maybe 10% return on investment. We saw all of those opportunities practically disappear overnight, right? The amount of capital that came into Southwest Florida, Arizona, Atlanta, the Carolinas, your neck of the woods, man. I mean, the amount of money that's come into those areas has been unprecedented. It's been exorbitant. So what I saw in the marketplace was a lot of operators decided to go with a longer run, a 7 to 10 year run on a deal flow, with the only factor that they could really put in there to offer those 8 to 10% cash on cash returns that an investor is looking for was to go in with your average 2% expense increase. And yet they're putting a 10-year run at a 5% rent increase. That's, I don't know, man. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm the idiot. I don't know. But I could not, in good conscience, raise money under that premise. So we have a responsibility to hunt yield. And what we did was we began to look at what was out there for a yield opportunity. And we found that in building our own assets. And we can build fast. Southwest Florida, it's all CBS, cinder block and stucco construction. Once they start throwing block, I mean, it moves fast, man, real fast. Hurricane tie the roof, interior done. I mean, we can get through there. We're doing 106 units. We anticipate being from scraping dirt to OC, I would say 14 months, 16 months. Yeah. And then stabilized in another 6 months because of the supply and demand after that. So the numbers on this one, just to give you a big picture idea, on the cost acquisition piece of the whole project, about $19 million, $22 million. We'll go in that price range. Then once stabilized, not 10 years out, but 2.5-3 years out, pushing a cap rate up to 5-5.5, where the cap is currently at 3-3.5. So I'm building in what I perceive to be a buffer. I'm now looking at a $36 million valuation based off of 3% rent increase, 2% expenditure, right? So building in those buffers, that's why it's made sense. When you start looking at the millennials and the older generations downsizing, I've got a 27-year-old son. He has zero interest in owning his own home. He wants to own cash flow in real estate, which he does, but he doesn't want to own his own home. So in the Florida market, we have a massive shortfall of both rental and housing, and it's only getting worse down there. So we're going to fill that void. And look, man, just what some of the bigger guys are doing. You start looking at the Wall Street money that's been allocated, billions of dollars to this strategy. I'm not up there with those guys yet, but I'm okay just picking up the crumbs that they drop along the way as they're doing the same projects.
Absolutely. Dave, I've certainly enjoyed this. Thank you for taking the time to come on today, kind of pull back the secrets on your company, on what it's taken for you to grow, shift, mindset shift, pivot. I mean, all the things you've done, you've worn a lot of hats, and it's just fun to see you in your lane doing what you do. Final four questions for you are this. If you could give our listeners one tool or resource that you can't live without.
One tool or resource that I can't live without. Business books, Audible. I can't read, but I can listen.
I love that. Number two for you is this. If you could help our listeners avoid one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
That would be due diligence. Trust but verify. Don't ever take my word or anybody else's word for anything and trust your gut.
Yeah, that's a good one. And the hardest, I think, of all lessons is trust your gut. So that's a good one. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
We're ESG friendly. I mean, I'm not overly save the planet and hug the trees. I think there's a middle road in there somewhere. But I do honestly believe that we need to start create a better environment in our facilities for not only our tenants, but the people who live around them. So we're a green builder. I think that's an important part of what we do.
Fabulous. Dave, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, learn more about you and what you guys are doing, what is the best way to do that?
You can go to freedomventure.com, jump on there, get a little education, see what we're doing, punch in some info, we'll touch gloves with you. Or I'm old school. You can call us at 781-922-4418, 781-922-4418, and make sure you let them know that you heard me here, and let's have a chat. Let's see if there's some deals to be done.
Fabulous. Thank you, Dave. Appreciate your time.
God bless, brother. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, That would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.